In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
It's time for the Fantasy Points Podcast, brought to you by FantasyPoints.com. Top-level fantasy football and NFL betting analysis from every perspective and angle, from numbers to the film room, with a single goal, to help you score more fantasy points.
Yo, what is going on, everybody? Welcome to the Fantasy Points Podcast, a very special edition of the Fantasy Points Podcast. This is actually the group that we get together every Thursday night for the Cashing Points DFS live stream. I'm here with our guy Scott Barrett, our guy John Proctor, here to break down what is now turned into a two-game Thanksgiving Day DFS slate. Kind of disappointing because Ravens Steelers kind of rounded out the slate at the third game, the anchor game. But yeah, we're going to be breaking down the two games here today. Cashing Points Podcast. It's kind of fun to do this. I'm so used to looking at your guys' faces, so I'm a little bit off track, not seeing your guys' faces while we do this. But Scott, how you doing today, man? It's been an interesting week so far for the site. I mean, we're all just kind of like scrambling, getting content done like a day early. But appreciate. I think we're trying to come out of the bunker just a little bit here. So how you doing today, man?
Yeah, well, you know how I'm doing. On top of everything else I'm dealing with today, I wrote 6,000 words on what was going to be an amazing, super fun slate. And then we lost Baltimore-Pittsburgh, and it's just sort of a more boring two-game slate, a less fun slate to analyze. And, you know, 2,000 words were written in vain, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it's a little bit frustrating for sure. I kind of had a feeling they would do this just because, I mean, the NFL has kind of been just shooting from the hip with all this COVID stuff. But like a couple weeks ago, that Niners game should have definitely been moved, but they didn't move it because it just didn't really matter all that much in the grand scheme of things. This game really matters. I mean, Steelers-Ravens is going to decide. This game could potentially decide AFC playoff seeding. So definitely disappointing that they don't really have any consistency with how they're moving games and stuff. But Proctor, man, how you doing? How you holding up over there?
Good, man. Doing the whole separate quarantine thing. Girlfriend upstairs, I'm downstairs. She has COVID. I likely will have COVID at some point, but you know, doing my best. Here we are. We'll get through it. I'm like got like the you know the three monitors on the dining room table, and we're gonna make it work.
There you go. Hey, at the very least, you'll have even more of an excuse to just sit around and watch football now. And hopefully you guys don't get too sick. Hopefully your girlfriend stays relatively has the relatively mild symptoms and stuff. But yeah, it's just I'm ready for this year to be over. I'm ready for it to be over. All right, before we get to the two gamer, I want to mention that we're running a humongous discount at fantasypoints.com. If you haven't subscribed already, this is like the perfect time to come check us out. It's only $20 for a premium account from now until the Super Bowl. So you get, you know, the rest of the season, week 12 through 17, plus the playoffs. Scott, John, and I will all be breaking down the playoff games this year. And playoff DFS is going to be really fun this year because we'll get an extra wild card game, which makes that, you know, first playoff slate even more fun. So again, $20, come check us out if you haven't already, fantasypoints.com/subscribe. You can also take an extra 10% off at checkout with the promo code Barfield10. You don't want to use code Barrett10. It's clearly better. Barfield10 is clearly better. So get an extra 10% off, $20 off a premium account. You can check out all of our DFS and gambling content plus live streams. We, you know, we do the Cashing Points live stream, which I mentioned. We've got John, Greg Cosell, and Adam Kaplan do an awesome matchups points live stream right before we do our show every Thursday. And Joe Dolan and Tom Browley have a waiver wire live stream they do every Tuesday. We do a Sunday live stream. We've got it all covered. So again, $20 premium account. Go check it out if you haven't already. All right, guys, let's get into this slate. I want to mention off the top, just without Ravens Steelers, it's obviously going to lead to a lot more lineup overlap, and the way DraftKings has set up pricing, at least, it's just really easy to kind of do whatever the hell you want to do. So keep that in mind when you're building rosters, that you're probably going to want to leave some salary on the table just to have a chance at a unique roster if you want to take down tournaments. If you're playing cash games, I think this is a pretty straightforward slate for cash, but you just, if you want to be a little bit more contrarian, you're going to have to leave salary on the table. But let's get to it. Texans-Lions, really the big news in this game is what happens with DeAndre Swift. He's in the concussion protocol. The Lions said he would have gotten a limited practice if they did practice on today. They just had a walkthrough today. So we'll see what Swift's status is leading into game time. And I really hope we get him because he'll be one of the best plays on this slate. Other news and notes, Kenny Golladay and Danny Amendola have both been ruled out already with their injuries. Kenny Golladay has not played since week 8. On the Texans side, Kenny Stills and Randall Cobb are both out. So we're going to kind of see a little bit more of a condensed target tree for the Texans. Well, obviously, you know, Fuller and Cooks are the main two guys, but we'll get to see Kiki QT in three wide receiver sets as their slot guy. Proctor, I mean, this slate is pretty straightforward at quarterback. It's Deshaun Watson as the QB1, and it's not even close. His, you know, expectation is like at least 6 points higher than Stafford and probably 9 to 10 points higher than Alex Smith and Andy Dalton. And frankly, I don't know if there's really a way off of him. What are your thoughts here on Watson and this Texans offense here?
Yeah, I think for, you know, like cash game single entry, Deshaun Watson's kind of the slam dunk. What is interesting though, I think, is just how much his ownership is going to be pushed up because of the cancellation or I guess the postponement. I mean, Watson will probably be 50%+ owned in the larger field stuff, which is kind of like unheard of for like a 2-game slate like this at quarterback. I mean, generally it's pretty spread out, but I think he's going to be just massively owned. So that's something you really have to consider, for tournaments, but like in cash games, I mean, most of, you know, you spit out the optimal lineups for a lot of the projections out there. And I mean, you're getting 3 or 4 Texans. So that just sort of goes to show you, you know, how good of an offense, how good the Texans offense is on this small slate compared to the other three. So, you know, I think in cash games, you're sort of focusing on this game, and then you're playing the underpriced players from the second game. But I mean, Watson, Cooks, Fuller, Kuti, and Jordan Akins are going to just be massively owned. And I think Duke Johnson will have some pretty high ownership too.
Yeah, Fuller and Cooks are going to be 60% easily. I think Cooks, especially on DraftKings, is still way too cheap. He's basically been, you know, we've talked about this on our normal live stream, but Cooks has basically been their number one wide receiver. He has 52 targets since Bill O'Brien was fired. Will Fuller has 46. So he's been the 1A. I think Cooks is pretty easily the strongest play on the Texan side. But yeah, I think we'll see. I think I'm with you on Jordan Akins. We're going to see him be pretty highly owned. This tight end slate, like, it's interesting. Like, there's a number of options, which is kind of unique for a 2-game slate. You usually get just trash, but like, there's 4 guys legitimately in play, but Akins is the cheapest out of all of them. And last week got a big roll bump. He had he ran 26 routes to Pharaoh Brown's 13 and Darren Fells 9. Akins got 6 targets on those routes and got into the box for 5 and 83. I just don't know if there's a way to really be unique with Texan stacks outside of like, you know, pairing Watson with QT, who's going to be like way lower owned. It's just one of those things where Watson really doesn't throw into the slot too much, and he's going to be, I mean, Cooks and Fuller is going to be wide open at all times. Scott, what's your read on the Texans this week? And, you know, can we play Duke Johnson? I mean, the guy's role has been amazing, but it's just really disappointed for us.
Yeah, so that's one of my questions is, like, does he work as leverage? Like, I feel like he has, you know, a minimal rushing expectation. But this is, like, the dream smash RB spot. The Lions are also down a starting defensive tackle to make matters at least a little bit worse. But that would be one of my questions is, like, does he make sense in a Watson fade lineup? And then, like, what do Watson fade lineups even look like? Because just, like, far and away, he was the best QB of the slate. And I liked it more when Pittsburgh and Baltimore were on the slate because, you know, they'll take at least some ownership. And, you know, Watson was just looking like the clear and easy number one. So what – one, is Duke Johnson a leverage play, or because he's basically a, you know, a scat back who's going to get 30 yards on 15 carries – is he a leverage play? And then two, what do non-Deshaun Watson lineups look like? Are you just like off-the-wall stacks? Are you like Alex Smith and Terry McLaurin? I don't know. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think the Duke Johnson question is a really interesting one because it's like, is a 40% owned running back leverage off of a 60% owned quarterback? And it's – he is – If you're cognizant of your build. So like if I'm doing lineups that have Duke and not Watson in large field tournaments, then that's massive leverage, even though he's 40% owned at running back. And then
you'd figure most of those Watson teams also have Duke. I mean, you can treat Duke as a pass catcher, obviously, because like Scott mentioned, they cannot run the ball whatsoever.
Yeah, and I think most like single entry or cash builds is sort of just capturing the Texans offense where people are going to play Watson, Duke, and maybe two of the pass catchers. So I think that's what you want to do. And then in like Watson tournament teams, I would want three pass catchers and no Duke. I mean, that's, you know, really your only way to be, in a sense, contrarian off of what are going to be popular, you know, poorly correlated teams in large field tournaments. In single entry stuff, you're totally fine to stack, you know, five Texans, you know, whatever, screw it. But I think you just really need to be careful of how you're building based on tournament sizes for something like this, because ownership is going to be insane. I mean, it's going to be so massively concentrated on the Texans.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing, though, is like on this slate, it's just really hard. It's really hard to find, you know, upside in these other three offenses. You know, if Kenny Golladay were playing for the Lions, I think you can make an argument for Stafford stacks, but their three wide receiver set this week is going to be Marvin Jones, Marvin Hall, and Jamal Agnew. Again, I really hope we get Swift, because if we don't, it's going to condense this slate even further. We're going to see Zeke go off at massive ownership, regardless of whether or not Swift plays, but it'll at least give us another option off of, you know, Duke and the Washington backs. If Swift doesn't play, guys, it's going to be back between Adrian Peterson and Kerryon Johnson to some sort of like gross split. Kerryon led them in snaps last week, but I don't know. I don't really think either of those guys are in play, realistically in play with if Swift misses. I mean, I suppose you could play Kerryon for and hope for, you know, another 3 to 4 targets at, you know, 4,300, but it's really thin. And frankly, I think there's just, you know, better play in the next game that's not that much more expensive.
I think if Swift were to not play, then I would be limiting every team that I build to two running backs.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, that was one of my things that I was going through earlier this morning, trying to build some lineups once they removed the Steelers game. Is like, that's the way to do it on this slate, is you're playing only two running backs and flexing receiver. Because there's just way better – there's just way more receivers, and they're – frankly, all their ceilings are way higher because we'll get to the next game, but like Washington backs are obviously capped unless, you know, Washington gets destroyed and they just play JD McKissick on every play. But yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, one thing that, that I have always talked about, and Scott has heard me say this a million times over, is on a slate, on these two game slates and these three game slates, you really need to make sure that your lineup sort of tells a story. It needs to make sense, because correlation is like the biggest thing on these kind of slates. Like, you know, if Stafford throws a pick six, how does this game go? You know, and you know, in your Stafford throws a pick six game, you know, you're playing Duke and you're playing Texans defense, and then you're building based on sort of that script. So sort of think of a script in your head, and then build in that way and make sure that the lineup makes sense on sort of how that script goes.
Let's say you are stacking up Watson and all of his pass catchers, which pretty much everybody will be doing. Is there any like line pass catcher that you're like head and shoulders have above, you know, the rest of the group? I mean, Hockenson is the thing about the slate is like everybody's cheap. You know, Hockenson is easy to get to. It's easy to play Marvin Jones. I think Marvin Jones will probably end up being lower owned than Cooper and Lamb and Cooks, especially being all in the same price range. But do you have an opinion on just if you're just going to take one Lions pass catcher, who that might be?
I'm going to kick this to Scott. Scott, does Bradley Roby shadow Marvin Jones?
Yeah, I think he does. I talked to Jeff Radcliffe about this. He said the same thing. He thinks Roby shadows Marvin Jones. So I think Hall is a decent swing for the fences punt play. He averages 4.5 targets per game, 10 fantasy points per game since week 8. Danny Amendola's out. So there's going to be like Jamal Agnew is going to get like 60% of maybe 55% of the routes. Quintez Cephas will get like 14%. Neither of those guys are really in play for me.
So do you remember the last time that Marvin Jones
on a Thanksgiving was shadowed by an elite QB? Yes, I
and
do.
Then he fucking turbo dunked. Oops, turbo freaking turbo dunked on everyone's head.
I think tweeted out at the time, Marvin Jones, like, just, you know, everyone's so pissed that they don't care about football now and have to spend time with their families. Because that's really what he did. He just dropped like 38 points. Everyone sharp was in on him, and all their lineups were immediately dead.
Yeah, so it just seems like, and I mean, this is like totally narrative, but almost every Thanksgiving, a Lions wide receiver just puts up a massive score. And that's just sort of like a historical thing. And it was Marvin Jones against Xavier Rhodes, and I guess that was basically Xavier Rhodes' funeral a few years back.
Xavier Rhodes never fully recovered. He's actually playing pretty well though for the Colts this year.
He is. They're using him more appropriately.
Yeah. Well, they're just sticking to zone. But Kenny Golladay had a huge game last year too on Turkey Day. I don't know. I kind of like Jamal Agnew a little bit more than you, Scott, just because look, it's a two game slate. You're gonna have to find ways to find a unique build. And last week Agnew was third on the team in routes. We know Stafford will throw to the slot a little bit, but he's slot only, and I think you can tell yourself a story. I mean, the Lions just got absolutely shellacked by the Panthers with P.J. Walker at quarterback. Watson is playing out of his mind, and if the Lions are going to have to throw a bunch in this game, there's going to be extra volume, especially if Marvin Jones gets shut down by Roby.
Yeah, and it's like I don't think Roby is some type of an elite talent, but I think Marvin Jones doesn't have much left.
Yeah, he's been living off of short touchdowns for fantasy this year. I mean, he's been fine with no Kenny Golladay, but yeah, just the explosive plays that we're used to seeing out of Jones have not been there this season. Okay, I think that'll pretty much do it on this game. I mean, Texans side is just so straightforward. Everybody knows the good plays there, and then we just have to hope we get Swift. Okay, Washington Cowboys, the football team, and the Cowboys. Dallas is actually 3-point favorites in this game, and it's crazy. I mean, whoever gets to 6 wins first is going to win the NFC East, so this is relatively speaking, a huge game, even though once one of these teams does make the playoffs, they're going to get killed in the first round. But be that as it may, big game here in Dallas for the NFC East. This game for injuries is pretty clean. Really, the only note I have is Terry McLaurin is battling an ankle injury, but he's going to play. They did a practice estimation today, and he would have been full. So he'll be fine. He's the clear number one wide receiver on this slate in a dome against Dallas secondary. No Trevon Diggs, who's put on IR last week. Cowboys just, everybody knows it at this point. They're just getting destroyed. Really, the biggest question in this game that I have, Scott, is like, what to do with Washington running backs? Because if you think the Cowboys are going to build a lead and Washington's going to have to play from behind, that would really lend itself to J.D. McKissic. 57 of his 66 targets have come when Washington has been behind. So give me your Gibson and McKissic read for this week, because Gibson obviously had the monster game in the spot a few weeks ago, but that was, you know, Washington controlled the game, Andy Dalton got hurt, et cetera.
Yeah, so I think this is really interesting. I think McKissic is a great ceiling play that's going to go under-owned, but I think, you know, just talking median projected value, I don't know that he's, you know, a great play by any stretch. But so last week, Gibson played on 54% of the snaps, McKissic 52%. But that was a game Washington won easily 20-9. If game script goes like Vegas is predicting it to go, they have Dallas favored by 3. That's shaping up to be a massive McKissic game. And what I thought was super interesting was prior to last week, Alex Smith was targeting J.D. McKissic on a whopping 31.7% of his throws. He was averaging 12 targets per 4 quarters with Smith under center, and he was running wide receiver routes. Looking at the matchup, Dallas is giving up the third most rushing fantasy points per game to opposing running backs. That's great. But they're giving up the fewest receiving fantasy points per game to opposing running backs. So that's, you know, much better for Gibson, worse for...
What about to wide receivers that are a running back?
What's that?
What about fantasy points to wide receivers who are actually a running back?
Who's that?
J.D. McKissic.
It could also be Gibson because he played wide receiver in college, but yeah.
No, I'm just messing with you.
Yeah. So, It's not obvious to me that one is a better play than the other.
Yeah.
Or either are amazing plays, but I do like the upside on both.
I think the best thing that we have on this slate, like the most bankable thing that we have on this slate, is that Gibson and McKissic are so massively game script dependent that you know exactly what has to happen for them to hit, right? So it's like, if I'm playing Antonio Gibson in large field tournaments, I want him paired with the Washington defense. If I'm playing J.D. McKissic in large field tournaments, I want him paired with Dallas defense. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, the script that needs to happen for this to go one way or the other. And I think it's fine to play Alex Smith, J.D. McKissic, and Dallas defense with Zeke. You know, like those are the types of builds that we can do, because we know what has to happen for those guys to hit. Like those guys, I mean, is there a pair of running backs in the league like more script dependent than Gibson and McKissic? It's like they don't exist.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the, you know, the whole question with Washington is, you know, obviously Terry McLaurin's an awesome play, but getting these Washington backs down right is huge. I'm kind of with you, Scott. I think McKissic is going to go under-owned, and I think his ceiling is going to be completely missed by a lot of projection systems. I think you can make an argument that, you know, Zeke obviously has the touchdown ceiling on this slate, and we'll see if we get Swift, but you can make an argument McKissic has like close to a 22-25 point DraftKings ceiling if, you know, he gets the 10 to 12 targets in a bad game script, you know, 8 catches, 60 yards. And, you know, he has touchdown equity too. They've used him as a goal line back a few times. They use him obviously on the shorter routes near the goal line too. And they just, when they throw in Alex Smith, looks to check down near when they get in close. So yeah, definitely with you on McKissic. Really the only other note for Washington, well, I guess there's two plays. You could play Cam Sims at 3,300. It's pretty thin. I think I prefer Kiki QT. I prefer Hall. I prefer Gallup. But Cam Sims is pretty clearly their number two receiver. He's led them in routes as their number two for four straight games behind McLaurin. Logan Thomas is interesting too, but I don't know. Interested to get your thoughts on this, Proctor. Who do you think is going to be the highest owned tight end on the slate?
It'll either be Akins or Hockenson. Which one ends up higher is a good question. I think Akins will end up higher owned because people will just play him with Watson and it just sort of makes the lineup work on pricing and he's the cheapest. But I think Schultz and Thomas will come in. Both will be way less owned than Hockenson and Akins. Those two will be much higher owned.
Yeah. I like Schultz more than Thomas. And I think because I'm with you that Hockenson and Akins will probably end up being higher owned. I kind of lends me to think that Schultz might be the leverage play at tight end. I mean, he's sandwiched in there between Hockenson on the high end, obviously Akins on the low end. And Andy Dalton has not been like, sure. He had the one really bad game against the Cardinals. Then he died against Washington, but he played pretty well last week. They moved the ball a lot better than I think people were expecting. And Washington's defense is just a neutral matchup at best. I think Schultz will probably end up being the lowest owned of that four, which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, this game is live to outscore the first game. I mean, and it's going to be just generally lower owned. People are going to play the running backs from this game and McLaurin. Otherwise, it will be lower owned than the wide receivers from game one, at least mostly, you know, Texans wide receivers.
Yeah, right. And, you know, that's the other thing about this game is like on Dallas's side, Michael Gallup has just kind of fallen off the face of the earth. Andy Dalton on like basically 2.5 full games. He's targeted Cooper and Lamb pretty much equally. They both have 25 targets over what amounts to about like 10 quarters, excuse me. But yeah, Cooper and Lamb are both still too cheap. Cooper's actually been kind of solid with Dalton, even in that game where Dalton fell apart against Arizona and they just didn't move the ball at all. Cooper still had a good game. He had 7 for 79 and a touchdown against Washington a couple weeks ago with Dalton back there in the game that Dalton was hurt. He had 7 for 80, and then last week he had 6 for 81. So Cooper's actually been pretty consistent with Dalton. Scott, what's your take here on these Cowboys pass catchers? And you know, do you have a strong lean on Cooper, Lamb, and Schultz?
Yeah, so what I think is interesting is that Dallas averages just 14.4 points per game since week 6. But this week they have a 24.5 point implied total, and they're favored to win in this tough matchup. So really, Vegas is predicting Dallas to be about 80% of what they were when Dak Prescott was healthy. And, you know, a lot of these plays are values in light of that. They're priced more in line with who they've been since Dak Prescott went down. So I think that's interesting. Ezekiel Elliott, we'll talk about it in a little bit, but he's an easy one-off if you want to fade the pass catchers. But I do kind of like the pass catchers. I do think they're interesting. Dalton's thrown 116 times this year. Amari and Lamb are tied with a 22% target share, but Cooper has been far more efficient. He has a 34% yardage share. I think he's definitely the best play of the three. And then I like Gallup second. Washington's really stout against opposing wide receivers, but they're kind of vulnerable deep, and that's his role in the game. And he's cheap and he's a punt. You know what it is. But CeeDee Lamb, I think, is my least favorite. And that's kind of surprising to me, given, again, decent target volume with Andy Dalton. And he's just a beast. And I just love him so much. But Washington's far and away the league's toughest defense against opposing slot wide receivers. That's a function of scheme. That's something we've been talking about. Wes Huber's been talking about since week 4. So, you know, it's not a great matchup, but, you know, Vegas is optimistic. I'm a little optimistic. I do like Amari. I do like kind of like Gallup.
I mean, that's your leverage. Lamb will be the highest owned of those three.
Yeah, I think so too. And yeah, like you mentioned, Scott, Washington is giving up the second fewest fantasy points per game through the slot. They're way more vulnerable out wide, and Cooper is probably going to be 25-ish, and I think we'll see Lamb at 35 or 40% on.
Yeah, and this is one of those where one of those spots where a projection model isn't taking into account position inside a position, you know, so they're looking at wide receivers versus, you know, opposing team. And they're not going to separate out that
Lamb is. Just to deviate a little bit, Johnny, what do you think about that? Because I was talking with Blender, you know, the big contrarian guy, and he thinks that's a mistake to look at this because, you know, it's already so noisy, and then you're digging into a stat even further to make it more noisy. But I actually think this is like one of our biggest edges, and I think it's been one of my biggest edges because, you know, the elite projection models, you know, Cardi or whoever, they're not looking at this. I don't think they have access to, you know, the super expensive stats that we have access to. And of course those stats are noisy, but a reason why they're noisy is like a slot wide receiver basically plays a different position from an outside wide receiver. At least that's how I look at it. But I meant to talk to you about this a few days ago, so I think it's great we can talk about it live on air.
I think it's noisy for the majority of the range. So, right? So it's the fifth worst team, the fifth best team, in between those two, it's incredibly noisy. But when you get to the very ends of those spectrums where, you know, in the past you would have Denver with Chris Harris, you know, slot wide receivers never did anything because he would shadow whoever was in the slot. You know, that was like something that was very, very bankable. And that was something where if projections were never going to tell you that Chris Harris is going to make your slot wide receiver catch, you know, 2 for 27 and 0. So that's where the manual adjustments have to come into play. So, you know, the guys who do the best projection work, they let their models go, and then they look for these very ends of the spectrum, and they do those manual adjustments. That's where if you can say that manual adjustment for that isn't as good as I think it should be, that's where you have an edge. So if you look and you say, okay, you know, I don't think CeeDee Lamb outscores Amari Cooper point per dollar. I mean, they're priced very similarly. Then that's where you have your edge against even a manually adjusted projection model. So this is one of those where you're getting into the very top end of the spectrum where it matters. You know, a team is 12th best against a slot wide receiver. Okay, I'm still going to play Keenan Allen against them, you know? But if they're number one or number two and there's something that I can specifically look to that's I can point to a scheme and say this is why they do it, then sure. You know, you also need to go back and look and say, okay, who have they played? You know, who have they shut down, et cetera, that kind of thing. But when it matters, it really does matter. I mean, it is a legitimately different position. And Dallas is one of those teams where they literally have three wide receivers who play three different positions versus some other teams, you know, like the Saints where guys rotate through or, I don't know, you look at Washington is another one where McLaurin will be in the slot or he'll be outside, that kind of thing. But, you know, Dallas sticks to those guys play their spot.
Yeah, good stuff. I also, I mean, just want to add too, I mean, it's a totally different position for the defense, you know, the defensive guys too. Playing slot corner as opposed to playing outside is, I mean, just it's night and day difference. And you get guys in there that are inexperienced.
I just wanted to add, you know, people are going to look at the slot corner on Washington. I think he has a good PFF grade, but this is really just a function of the scheme they run where they just, you're not getting anything from your slot wide receiver and we're going to, you know, push it outside and deep and you're going to get that, but you won't really get anything else. I don't know. I can't explain it as well as Wes explained it, but it definitely is a function of scheme and looking at slot corner is not going to help you there, but they are far and away giving up the fewest fantasy points per game to opposing slot wide receivers. It is worth mentioning Tyler Boyd did have the best day of any slot wide receiver against them last week, and he was pretty effective. Also, polar extremes. Johnny is so on point there. Like, I've done into a bunch of super noisy stats, like drop rate. It's one of the worst stats. But even if you look at that, at the polar extremes, there's a lot of value there. Like, guys who rank you know, top five in drop rate in two consecutive years outside of Amari Cooper. They're just like done for forever.
Yeah.
So that was a great point. But we can dive back into this.
No, I think I just want to point out one thing too, that's really going to play into this. So do you remember when CeeDee Lamb got blanked against Washington like a few weeks back, and he got like dinged up in that game or whatever? This is the game where everyone's going to be, you know, going back to where he got dinged. He didn't actually get blanked, even though he got five targets. So people are going to go right back to him. If Cooper or Gallup outscore CeeDee Lamb, that's like a legitimate edge on the slate.
Yeah, no doubt. In that game, Lamb only played like half the snaps because, like you mentioned, I think he got hurt on a punt return. I think it was a punt return he got hurt on.
Yeah, but he had five targets and 0 points before he got hurt.
Right. I think Cooper is by far the best play on the Cowboys side, and I think Gallup and Lamb are really close in terms of expectation this week. Schultz is really interesting too, just because, I mean, like we mentioned, Hawk and Akins are going to be way higher owned, and I think he might be somewhat of a leverage play off those guys. But I mean, if you're not stacking Watson here, Proctor, like what's your next favorite team stack on the slate? Because I think you can make an argument like Lions, Washington, and Cowboys are all kind of close-ish. I guess Dallas is probably the number two, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think and then Washington. I think Stafford's probably my least favorite.
Yeah.
Just because he's going to project like well compared to Dalton and Smith. So anyone who's just clicking a button on Optimizer is going to get more of Stafford than Dalton and Smith. And I mean, we're literally a week off of them doing nothing against a, you know, not even a good opposing team. You know, that team's just, they're just a mess. And I think there is more talent on Washington and Dallas to sort of pair with my quarterback. It's like you play Stafford and you're like, who do I stack him with? And it's just a bunch of nobodies. So, you know, you play Smith, you can pair him with McKissick, Thomas, McLaurin, Sims. You play Dalton, you have all three wide receivers and Schultz to choose from. And I do think there a guy who's just a little bit of leverage would be if you play the script where Washington like blows the doors off of Dallas, then Tony Pollard on like your Dalton getting blown out teams is in play at 4K.
Yeah, I think Pollard is in play regardless of the game script too. I mean, he's min price. I think people will try to play lines backs if Swift plays, and he's seen consistent, you know, a consistent boost in snaps as opposed to early in the season. He was only getting like 6, 7, 8, 9 snaps in the first couple games. Last 4 to 5 weeks, they've been, you know, using him more of a change of pace guy, give Zeke a break, you know, getting, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 touches. So for large fields, I think Pollard is certainly in play. And obviously if Dallas gets killed, which they very well could, Washington's defense is definitely no sieve. Pollard will get even more of a boost. All right, guys. That was fun. Wish we could talk Ravens Steelers and really round this out, but
Willie Snead, man, was going to be such a good play.
Dude, everyone wanted to play Willie Snead. He's going to be like 30% owned, and he's going to score like 6 fantasy points.
And Hollywood Brown.
Was he going to be owned? I thought he wasn't going to be owned at all.
Everyone's like favorite contrarian play was Snead and Gus Edwards, and it's like, guys, they're not contrarian anymore.
All right, can we rank these?
What do you mean rank them?
Rank what? Right.
So Deshaun Watson, QB1.
Yes.
Who's QB2, Stafford?
Ugh. Nah, I think it's Smith or Dalton.
He would project as QB2, but I would rather play Smith or Dalton.
And then how would you play Smith and Dalton? Smith with McLaurin and Sims?
I think you also play him with McKissick too. Because if you think about it, they're going to have to be – if you want Smith to hit a ceiling, they got to be throwing a ton, and if they're going to be throwing a ton, they're going to be from behind, and a lot of those looks will go to McKissick.
Yeah, I would have McKissick on most of my Smith teams.
Okay, who are the best running backs, Swift or Zeke as RB1? We didn't really – did we talk to Zeke at all?
Zeke's pretty straightforward, honestly. Yeah. He's
I think Zeke and Swift are the two best running back plays.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the only two that really have that, like, full-blown role capability.
Yeah.
Do you play – so you have to – is Zeke a stack with Alex Smith? I guess he is.
Yeah. I probably wouldn't – like, in larger field tournaments, I would not want Zeke and Dalton together. You know, even though there's avenues for them to – make me eat those words, like, I just think, like, in my head it doesn't make sense.
Washington's wide receiver too, by the way, is Cam Sims. He ran 26 routes last week. Steven Sims 11, Isaiah Wright 10, so he would be the only other guy. I have it Swift, Zeke, Duke, Gibson, McKissick, and then if Swift is out, carry on behind McKissick.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think if we get Swift, I think he's the number one on the slate. So I think I'm with you on that.
Tight end, I think, is Akins or Hawk, but like you said, Schultz and Thomas are fine. They're going to be lower owned.
I really like Schultz.
Yeah, here's what I wrote up about Schultz. I think this is interesting. Schultz leads the Dallas in reception since week 8. His 19 targets ranked second most. Give him 27 yards, and he has the team high in receiving yards. He's a top five wide receiver tight end since week 2 in routes run, yards per game, targets per game. All that's crazy to me.
Yeah, and he's going to be – I think Hawk and Akins will be like 30%, and Schultz will float around half of that probably.
Washington is kind of tight end funnel-ish too.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. They've given up a lot of production to tight ends this year. Let's go through receivers real quick too. I think McLaurin is pretty much.
My God. Yeah.
I mean, he's by far and away the best receiver on the slate.
So by my numbers, he's had like one of the toughest CB schedules of all time. Darius Slay shadow, Patrick Peterson shadow, James Bradbury twice, Trevon Diggs, Desmond Trufant, the Rams, another team that ranks amazing. And then this week he gets his softest matchup of the season. Dallas ranks second worst in schedule adjusted fantasy points per game to opposing wide receiver ones. And then the guy they used to shadow him when he went off against them in week 7, Trevon Diggs, is now out. It's just like nuclear spot.
Yeah.
To the point where I think Cooks is wide receiver one, but he's a close two, just a massive upside.
Yeah, and in that game against Dallas a few weeks ago, McLaurin had a touchdown called back that was, like, really sketchy. I mean, he arguably could have gotten, like, 35 DraftKings points if they had to, you know, throw a little bit more in that game. But, yeah, I think Cooks – I'm with you on Cooks. I think Cooks is, you know, especially when you bake in price, he's $1,000 cheaper. I think people are going to play Fuller too. It's not like, you know, one's going to be significantly higher owned than the other. I think I'm with you on Cooks as the two on the slate.
Yeah, and I think that's where it's going to project for the ownership. It's going to be McLaurin and Cooks will be probably the two highest owned, and then Fuller will be in there. I think a lot of people will play Watson, Fuller, Cooks, and Akins. That will be a popular stack for tournaments.
Yeah, I guess the one way to generate leverage off of or generate leverage with Watson stacks is to play QT or Duke. And just pick between one of Fuller and Cooks and hope you get the right one, because they haven't been Cooks and Fuller have not really been super correlated in terms of their production. Cooks has had a few monster games where Fuller does nothing and vice versa. So that's what you're picking between there. And we spent plenty of time on Dallas, guys. I think it's pretty clear we all prefer Cooper over Lamb and Gallup by a pretty good margin.
Yeah.
The Lions are, I guess, the hardest one, because if Roby does shadow Marvin Jones when he's on the outside, the ball's got to go somewhere. And I'm with you, Proctor. I don't think Roby's like, I don't think he's Jalen Ramsey or anything, but he's been playing like a top five corner. And Marvin Jones is clearly on the back nine of his career. I think Hall is pretty interesting, and I don't think Jamal Agnew is thin at all. I think he's legitimately in play.
Yeah. Yep. No. I think you have to consider Agnew. You have to consider Hall, and I mean, and you know, Hawkinson may end up being a little higher on than Akins. It'll be pretty close between those two. Those are going to be really popular. People just don't play Marvin Jones.
Yeah. Yeah, Marvis, he's had a few good games this year, but yeah, I'm kind of low on him in this spot. All right, guys, I think that'll do it. Thanks for listening, everybody. This was a podcast version of the Cashing Points live stream. So if you like what you heard, come check us out at fantasypoints.com. Again, $20 for the rest of the season and throughout the playoffs. To get our DFS gambling content, our guy Tom Riley is crushing the gambling side of things too. So come check us out.
Friday, 4 p.m. live stream. I think it's going to be free for all. So yeah. if you just listen to the podcast, but you're stingy and don't want to subscribe, I think you just make a free email account and you can get access to the Friday, 4 p.m. Cashing Points live stream for the main slate.
Yep. All of our live streams are freebies this week. So yeah, good call there. Scott, is it Eastern time or Central time, 4 o'clock on Friday?
You know I'm bad with time zones.
Sorry, I had to. All right, fellas, that's going to do it. For Scott, for Johnny, I'm Graham. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Fantasy Points Podcast. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite platform. And come join the roster at fantasypoints.com.